Stay tuned for a special edition of the Multifamily Deal Lab podcast. Welcome to the Multifamily Deal Lab podcast, where we dissect the deal before your eyes and ears so you can discover the strategies and tactics that got each deal to the finish line. Strategies and tactics that you can put in your own toolbox to get you to the closing table. From sourcing the deal, raising, due diligence to the property takeover, Multifamily Deal Lab shows how you too can get the deal done. And now here's your host, David Lindahl.
Everybody, welcome to Multifamily Deal Lab. I'm your host, Dave Lindahl. And I'm with Dave Anderson and Alan Schnurr. And combined, they've got a total of 1,200 units right now. And they're going to tell us how they did that. So first of all, tell everybody who you are and where you're from.
Hi, my name's Alan Schnurr. We're here in Houston, Texas right now. And I've been buying apartment buildings for the last 3 or 4 years and single family houses for the last maybe 10 years. I've owned Dave's stuff for a while now, and over the last few years, I really started opening up those books, and my partner and I here, we're going in contract on our 12th apartment complex right now. We own 11. So like Dave said, it's around 1,200 units, and combined we have around 120 houses as well.
Yeah, so we started doing single family business sort of independently in Houston, built up that single family portfolio. Then I guess you bought your first property on your own, 76 units in July of 2009. December of 2009, we bought our first 52 unit together, and that's where we've been buying apartments since.
So how did you guys meet and become partners?
We were at kind of in a, there's an investment group in Houston, and we were members of the investment group, and I had seen Alan a couple times on road trips with that. They do acquisition road tours and operational road tours. Seen Alan a couple of times, and 2009 was a really tough time, as you might know, to buy property. You know, and frankly, I had been trying to buy something all year. Alan had bought that one deal in July, I guess it was. You know, and I was frustrated. I called Alan and said, "Hey, you know, I want to buy something." And I don't know. You got a lot of single families. You got this apartment that you did by yourself. You have a pretty big W-2 job that you're thinking about leaving because of apartments. I'm really frustrated. I need to have lunch with you, and maybe you can give me some guidance. So we did that, and I'm just trying to shorten the deal. But basically, the rest is history. At that lunch, Alan said, "Listen, I'm going to buy something." You know, really his quote was, "I'm going to buy something in the next 30 days. If I buy two before you buy one, you should go get a job." But he said, "You know, listen, I'll give you $150,000 for the next deal you find." You know, so about 2 weeks later, one of the deals I've been looking at since January, I guess, came through, called him up and said, "Hey, you know that 150? I need 300. So he said, "All right, let's do it. You know, do you believe in it?" We closed it in 1 week, all cash, and that was the first one we did together.
So when you first started doing apartments, I'm going to ask you to take us from your very first apartment deal and how you discovered it, how you got into it. And then you guys have done, you're going on your 12th deal. So then I want to talk about how you turn this into a machine. Okay, so talk about your first one.
Okay, so the first one for me was, I didn't have a lot of liquid cash, and I stumbled into a deal that was an owner finance deal in Pasadena, Texas. It was a cosmetic dentist that thought he didn't want to be a dentist and fell in love being a dentist right before he left his job, and just needed to get rid of his property. So I got to tell you, Dave, it was like a $2 million asset that I more or less got into for less than $50,000.
Wow.
So, you know, he left his financing there. I took control of the property, and I did so well with the property that I refinanced him out within a half a year.
How much equity had you created? How much did you take it over for?
I think I paid around $1.7 million was the sales price. And he just wanted me to bring enough money to the table where he wouldn't have to come out of pocket for brokerage and closing fees. Yep. But what a lot of people don't realize is there's a lot of credits left on the table when you're closing, right?
Yeah.
Tax, deposits, and stuff like that. So I thought I needed around $60,000, but I think it turned out to be less than $30,000 or something like that. And once I figured that out, and you know, whatever the cash flow was, a few thousand or 5,000 a month, I realized that it's really scalable. And just from there, I just started buying more and more apartment buildings, and now we're up to 11.
Do you want to talk about the second deal, or you want to talk about the other stuff?
How many units was that first deal?
The first deal was a 76-unit building.
Did you sell it, or did you sell it out?
No, I still have it.
You haven't sold anything.
I'm waiting.
Yeah.
Nice. How much is that one cash flowing for you right now?
It's probably cash flowing anywhere between $3,000 and $5,000 a month. If you want to include the principal, it's cash, you know, I'm netting $3,000 to $5,000 a month, but with the principal, it's probably $6,000 or $7,000 a month.
Sweet. Yeah. And then the $30,000, I assume you took out of your pocket, or did you bring somebody else in, or where'd you get that money?
No, I had a choice, and this is to all the people out there that think you need money to get involved. I had the money,
yeah.
But I didn't have the money. I can easily get up at my RIA, my rich club, put my hand up, and ask who wants to partner on a deal and bring $30,000-$40,000 to the closing table and own a $2 million asset that's going to cash flow around $5,000. It's a no-brainer.
I assume you probably had that money from flipping your houses?
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. So there's something special about that second deal you want to talk about?
You were just asking the progression on that deal. It was a portfolio deal. There were three properties. It was basically the 18. It was a 52 unit deal. There were 18 units.
Hold on a second, Dave. Al, how did you find that deal from the dentist? Did you letter campaign, broker?
LoopNet.
Oh, LoopNet. He listed it himself?
Yeah. No, the broker listed it on LoopNet.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, I was also in the right place at the right time because that deal had fallen through, and then they really wanted to get rid of the deal. So you never know when it's your turn to find a great deal. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, the broker had a box of due diligence. Everything was just ready to go. And I believe the first time it was on the contract, it wasn't an owner finance deal. But by the time I got to it, it was with financing, which made, you know, the world a difference, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially on cash return.
Pretty much all of the deals, I think of the deals that we've done, that was the one, you know, direct owner deal. It was a seller finance. We just did in December, we did a small deal, a 39 unit deal that was a private seller. But other than that, they've really been, you know, Fannie Mae foreclosures, banks, you know, just kind of REO deals or receiver deals. And they've really been brought to us by brokers.
So the brokers are bringing you deals. So how did you get in with the brokers to the point where they're bringing you these quote unquote pocket listings?
I think it's really about credibility. We think we do a really good job of enforcing with the brokers that we're going to protect them, that we're going to make fast decisions. We're going to give them a fast no. If it's not a deal for us, they'll know as soon as they call us. We make sure they know. We keep relationships up with them. We know what they know what we're looking for. But the biggest thing I think is that they know we're going to close. So we know the only deal that we haven't closed that we had under contract had $150,000 strip, copper strip done to it the weekend before the close, and the bank didn't want to renegotiate that deal. But otherwise, we closed everything. We put up some significant earnest money, and the brokers, like particularly, we have a 160 unit deal that we did where the broker called us from the parking lot with the receiver and said, "Hey, I'm in the parking lot. You've got to come right now." You know, and so we did that. So we did that deal. He said, "This is your guy's kind of deal, and I know you want this." And basically, on that one, called Alan, said, "Let's go." I stopped by the bank on the way. I printed the LOI before I left the house. Stopped by the bank and had a cashier's check. And when we got to the property, I gave the receiver the LOI and the cashier's check.
Wow, that's hustling.
We do what we can.
And you know, just to kind of talk, I mean, you can't be shy around the brokers. So, you know, have lunch with them. You were talking about that last week. Become friendly with them. I mean, we're always in touch. There's around six main shops here in Houston, and we have good contacts with each shop. And you know, we try to get friendly with them. We try to have lunch with them, and we call them even when we're not doing deals. Just stay in touch.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So you own six deals yourself. You have six deals that you've partnered with other investors on. So how, and I assume that you partnered with them to raise the funds to do those deals, yes? Or did they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Dave and I, we don't put any more money in our deals. The last six deals that we partnered up with.
A little bit in the first couple, I think. And now lately we've got a pretty standard program that we're trying to do.
All right. So when you say standard program, what do you mean?
Basically, we take a 3% acquisition fee. We do a 50-50 deal with our partners. We do a 5% management fee. We take a little bit for running it. So we take 5% property management fee. We take a little bit for running the asset or the partnership. And that's kind of the deal. We've all of our debt right now is recourse. We're looking to do non-recourse, but so far we've got a fair amount of recourse on us. We're very confident with where we bought the properties and the cash flow on the properties. Yeah. No, we bought pretty well. So that's kind of what we're doing. And so we may put our money on this, on the, whatever we call it, A side of the deal, the investor side of the deal. But the last couple of deals, we haven't.
So, all right. So how are you finding your investors for these deals? How much money do you think you've raised in those six deals?
$3 million?
Yeah, $3-4 million.
All right. So how are you finding your investors? Where's your favorite place?
Definitely like going to our investor clubs in town.
Okay.
Yeah, you always get a moment to, you're shaking hands with people, you're meeting people. It's not just, hi, how are you? Oh, I'm good. It's, you know, here's what I'm working on. I'm great, but let me tell you about the deal. So we're always having conversations. We're always networking. Occasionally we get to get up on a stage for 5 minutes and, you know, talk about a business idea and, you know, just pair up with people that have the same kind of interests as us.
We've got some friends from our corporate days that are in a little bit. You know, just our professionals that we use sometimes see what we're doing and are impressed by that. So we've got one of our attorneys, one of our SEC and litigation attorneys is in one of our deals.
People you used to know in your corporate lives or your past lives, people, your attorneys that are doing the deals, you're looking at them, they're looking pretty sweet, so they want a piece of it.
Right.
Going to your local real estate investment groups and getting in front of as many people as you can. Where's the most unusual place do you think you found some money or an investor?
Unusual. I don't have a good answer for that. I don't know.
You know what's tough about that question? I wouldn't partner with anyone I didn't like.
Yeah, I think that's the issue.
So if I was in an unusual spot, maybe I'm not looking for it. But I can tell you one thing. The most non-assuming people have the most money to invest.
Yeah, that's a good point.
We don't have a story like your, I can't remember the guy's name in San Diego that you know, was going into surgery and signed up as, you know, his surgeon.
A surgeon. Yeah, went to the bank. Went to Papa Del's, went to the bar. Got a banker, $200,000.
But we do. I mean, we did just get back from lunch with a banker, and the banker actually asked us, they said, well, why am I not in your last deal? He says, you know, I made money moving from my last bank. Why didn't you guys call me on your last deal? So
So now you're the go-to guys.
Yeah, definitely.
So if somebody was just starting out and they're a little bit nervous, let me ask you, what do you think the biggest mistakes were that you've made?
Showing up to a work site with a checkbook?
That, I learned that from Alan. Don't show up to your work site with a checkbook.
What, to pay your contractors?
Run it all through. At least sit it down at a desk with QuickBooks or if you have someone working for you and mail out checks. You know, when you first do your first deal, you're excited to get out there and you want to see everybody's working and you want to see the progress. But at the same time, all those contractors want to get paid on the spot.
Right.
So slow it down, pass inspection, have a check sent to them.
I would say probably on our first deal together, the biggest mistake, if you will, was underestimating the repairs, the rehab on the deal. We fired two roofers and two electricians. We were trying to build up from our single. We were able to leverage the experience that we had from our single families, but the people that we had in our single families, it was a little bit difficult to leverage, just because each unit, you might say, is like a single family, but it's a different, there's a larger skill set. So it really is project management. When we take over one of these vacant 52 unit buildings or a vacant 160 unit building, sometimes your single family guy that's really been your go-to single family guy and has been great, isn't the right project manager for that kind of a deal. So one of the things that Alan's done lately that's really helped us is crank down the number of units at a time that we do. For example, we do them in a block. We'll bring on two teams, have them compete. You get 8 units, you get 8 units. When you're done, we'll sign off, we'll pay for that 8 units. And then the first guy done, you know, to our standard, then gets the next 8 units.
So the guy that gets
the most business is the guy that's the most aggressive, but at our quality standard. And, you know, previously we kind of didn't have as much control and that probably hurt us a little bit in the rehabs.
So what do you think the biggest thing you did right was?
Partnered up.
Yeah, definitely partnered up. And
you guys, you know, usually partnerships are strong because one person is strong at something and the other is weak at something. So what are you guys good at and how does the other person complement?
So I can't remember how you described it when we were in San Diego, but I kind of look at it like a Venn diagram. You know, and everybody has their, you know, kind of independent skill sets and you have a good overlap. I think so Alan can walk onto a property and understand that there's a problem. Right, he can feel that there's a problem operationally, so he's probably stronger on the actual operations. He also has a much better decision velocity than I do. I like to think about stuff a little bit more, but if you send me the numbers, I can look at that and realize if there's a problem or how things are going. So we've had situations where Alan's been, for example, maybe I'm out of town and Alan's on due diligence on a property. And he calls me up and says, hey, I feel that there's something wrong. And then maybe he reads me the numbers and I say, oh, yeah, the manager's stealing from it, from that property, you know, or something. We know, you know, we're just a good team that way. Yeah. Like I said, just sometimes fast decisions and operations, you know, he'll do and I'll do a little bit more of the analytical.
I think, Dave, it's a little the New Yorker meets the guy from Houston. You can tell someone, you can feel like if you feel like you're getting hustled too quick.
Well, Alan used to, you know, run an energy trading company, and the only thing I know about that company is that all of the contracts are settled every hour across the United States. Okay. So you're running all, you know, heads out, you know, 0 to 59:59, and then at 60, it starts over, and everything you did the prior hour doesn't matter at all. And so that's kind of the background that he's from, and I'm from a soft, you know, large system software development background. So
where it takes a half a year to close one deal.
So I want to thank you. We'll see everybody next week, and don't touch any doorknobs out there. You know, be safe. Take care. See you next week.
You've been listening to the Multifamily Deal Lab podcast, where the deals get done. If you'd like to learn more, visit davesfreebook.com. And don't forget to leave a 5-star rating and review and hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for listening.